nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Enjoy the show.
So, today I'd like to continue and finish up our discussion on this general method, this non-equilibrium green function method, which allows you to actually calculate current versus voltage and all the detailed information about devices, like the spectral function, electron density, etc., using a full quantum mechanical method. As I mentioned, what is widely used and often works quite well is something called the semi-classical method, and that we have discussed. And there, the input from quantum mechanics is your density of states or density of modes, etc. And then you think of electrons as particles that move around among those density of states that are available. That's one way of thinking. That's the semi-classical approach. And the full quantum mechanical method, that's where we actually go straight to Schrodinger equation and describe current flow at that level. And the basic equations, let's be all summarized here. And in a way, they come from Schrodinger equation. What I've been trying to show you is how, starting from Schrodinger equation, you can put contacts on it and try to understand where these come from. And the basic idea was that usually the Schrodinger equation, write it here. Is written for an isolated system described by this Hamiltonian H, which is an Hermitian quantity. And what we are doing here is effectively in order to describe current flow at that level, at an atomic level, what you need to do is figure out a way to incorporate contacts into the Schrodinger equation, if you will, which is not what normally people do. What's normally done is this semi-classical approach, where from Schrodinger equation you get density of states, and then at a macroscopic level you put in the contacts. That is with the drift diffusion equation, or where you say that you've got contacts where there is electrons have a certain chemical potential. That's done at a macroscopic level. At that point, of course, you're out from the quantum mechanical part of the story. Okay, but in terms of looking at really small devices and understanding things, I guess what's needed is to put the contact straight on Schrodinger equation, and that's kind of what this allows you to do, where that's the Schrodinger equation, and then the connection to the contact that comes in through this. The sigma, it has a Hermitian part, which is just like modifying H a little bit, but in addition, there is an anti-Hermitian part, and that's the gamma. That's what the broadening is about, right? And then there is, in general, some source term. And as I mentioned, one of the most important parts of this whole discussion is that when you have multiple sources, something coming from here and something coming from here, or coming from different origins in the same contact, the thing is you cannot add their wave functions. What you have to add is the psi star size. And that's this Gn, which is like, as we discussed, is this psi dagger. Right? In the sense that, or I guess I wrote this the opposite, what I meant was psi dagger psi, where this is a column vector n by 1, and this is 1 by n. Oh, I see. So if I multiply the two, what I'd get is a 1 by 1. Whereas the way this matrix is defined, it's the other way around. It's psi-psi dagger. So I guess what I wrote earlier, that would be, what, that's how the Gn is defined, as we discussed before. Okay. And then what it allows you to do is take multiple sources, some of which come from contact 1, some of which come from contact 2, and add them all up to get your net Gn. The point is you don't add the size, you add up the psi-psi daggers from various sources. And so what we had done earlier was I tried to show how, starting from the Schrodinger equation, you could get this idea of this correlation function, the psi-psi dagger, how you got this equation. And these terms here, they represent the strengths of the source term. How strong is this source that comes in from that contact? Okay, that was the idea here. And then when you put these Fermi functions to 1, that's when you get this total density, the spectral function, which is the equivalent of the density of states. Those are all things we discussed. And what we were doing last day was talking about the current. Yeah.
Just something I want to know. In this case, you are taking it as a two-terminal device. So if you have a multiple terminals, how would we fit in that thing into this equation?
Okay. Actually, I'll say a few words about it a little later anyway. But if you had multiple terminals, basically what it means is instead of having just sigma 1, sigma 2, you'd have sigma 3, sigma 4. Every contact would have its own sigma. That's about it. And so here, when I'm defining the Green's function, this sigma I wrote as sum of sigma 1 plus sigma 2. Well, you could put in sigma 3 and sigma 4 as well. That's about it. And this equation, which gives you the current at terminal I, with 4 contacts, you could add, you could write I1, I2, I3, I4. They would all come out of here. So extension to multiple terminals is straightforward. So here also it will be gamma 1 plus gamma 2 plus gamma 3 plus gamma 4. Same here, etc. Okay. Now, so let me just say a few more words then about the current formula. Because one thing is that when we did the density of states and the spectral function, we started from the time-independent Schrodinger equation, which means instead of this, it was just E psi. One could start from that, and we said how to get the Green's function, etc. That's what we were doing before. Now, in order to discuss current, though, directly, usually one needs to go to the time-dependent one, because the way you think of current, if you want to know what is the current coming into this part, you'd ask, what is the rate at which the number of electrons inside is changing, the density of electrons? And the thing is that psi-psi dagger is the electron density. So what you really want is something like d dt of psi-psi dagger. Or psi dagger psi. The point is we will take the trace of it anyway. Because when we take psi-psi dagger, that gives you a matrix whose diagonal elements tell you the occupation of the different states. And if you just add them all up, that gives you the total number of electrons inside. So that's like taking the trace of Gn. That gives you the total number of electrons. So you want the trace of that anyway. And when you're taking the trace of the product of two things, it doesn't matter which way you write it. You can always rotate them around. Like instead of psi-psi dagger, you could write psi dagger psi. Makes no difference. It's all the same. So what you're really trying to find then is trace of this. And when you do this, you'll get a number of terms. And those then you can interpret as these currents, basically. So that's the whole kind of what we are trying to do, and I was trying to show us where this comes from. And if you remember, the idea was that, let me just keep this up here. This trace, instead of writing it everywhere, because it kind of takes up space, it's kind of understood, so I won't write it everywhere. It's understood that everything we're doing has a trace on it. So every matrix, you have to take the trace. So if you look at this quantity, then the thing is, you'll have two terms, one of which is IH bar d dt of psi multiplied by psi dagger. And then there will be another one, which is like psi times IH bar d psi dagger dt. Those were the two terms. And then what we said is, instead of this, we'll put back from Schrodinger equation. So we'll just put all that back in here. is it? And here, in order, we also want to replace this from here, except that we now need the Hermitian conjugate of this. So, the Hermitian conjugate, let's try to write it. If you take the Hermitian conjugate of that, what do we get? I'm first taking the Hermitian conjugate of the left. So psi becomes psi dagger. Anything else? I becomes a minus I. Okay. And then on the right hand side, h psi becomes psi dagger, h dagger. But then h dagger is the same as h because h is Hermitian. And then plus psi dagger, sigma dagger. And this one I have to leave the dagger there because sigma is not necessarily Hermitian. And then S dagger. So that would be the Hermitian card. So I can use this then to replace the IH bar d psi dagger dt over there. And I pick up a minus sign here. And inside what I get is whatever's up there. Now, first thing I claim is that this term here will cancel that. The question is, do you see why? Let me try to write this up here. I'm now trying to. So the first term here is h psi psi dagger, and this is psi psi dagger h. So am I allowed to cancel those things? Ordinarily, no. These are matrices. When you multiply them, AB is not the same as BA. But the thing is, as I had mentioned earlier, there's a trace implied on the whole thing. Right, which I'm not writing everywhere. Remember, I'm trying to find the trace of this, and so it's the trace of everything. And one property of traces is the trace of AB is the same as trace of BA. So when you're taking the trace of a matrix, you can turn them around any way you want, actually. If it is trace of ABC, then it's also equal to trace of not CBA, but CAB. You have to do it in cyclic order. That's it. So when you get to three things, you have to be careful. So it's CAB. So what that means is H psi psi dagger, and so I can write it as psi psi dagger H. That's okay. I can take the H from here and put it here. I couldn't put it in between. I couldn't put a psi H psi dagger, for example. That wouldn't be right. Okay? Anyway, so as long as I'm moving them around cyclically, that's the same as that. So this just cancels off. So that's why I don't need this. We take the next one, is sigma psi psi dagger, and then minus psi psi dagger. And sigma dagger. And here again, since I'm taking traces, I can take this and put it here. And this is where I'd say that I could take the two together, sigma minus sigma dagger, and then have a psi psi dagger here. And remember, psi dagger is what we call Gn. That's like the electron density. So this is what was Gn. And sigma minus sigma dagger, that's related to what we normally call gamma. So that will be like minus I gamma. So what I claim is that that second term here will end up giving you something like minus I gamma Gn. Trace, of course, is implied. So what I'm sure, so what we have done is taken care of this and this, they just cancel. These two give you minus I gamma Gn. That's all. And I still have one more to go, and that's this one, S psi dagger. But that's it. So that's the part I still need to deal with. Otherwise, we're almost there. So if you look at it, actually, in terms of this final expression for current that I wrote down here, we kind of have the gamma Gn part of it. That's this one. And what this is supposed to give you is that first one. So this just takes a little more algebra to get there, but this is the whole idea. Okay. Now, to get there, I need to make one more replacement. And that was, if you remember, we earlier had the expression that, remember, S is the strength of the source term, and what we had was something like this, that psi is equal to Gs. Remember, this G was like the response of the system, this Green's function. Green's function multiplied by the source term, that's what gave the psi. This was what we had when we were obtaining the expression for Gn, all that. So if I use that, then I'll get something like this. So, S psi dagger, so instead of S dagger, psi is Gs. Now, can you help me with S psi dagger? What is psi dagger? S dagger, G dagger. So, once again, since I'm taking traces, I could turn these things around. So if you like, I could put the S up front or the S dagger to that. So let me write it this way. So I've done, just put all the S daggers at the end, or maybe I'll put it in front. Let me just keep it like it is. This may be easier to see. I'm just taking the S, put it here. Okay. So what you have here is G dagger minus G. What's that in terms of A, the spectral function? If you look here, this I times A. That's I times A. And the SS dagger, that's basically the strength of the source term. You know, that is what we had called the sigma n. That's the input. That's what is coming into this thing. That's the sigma n. That's what you've written here. So you get a sigma n there. So bottom line is, then, I could write d dt. In fact, let me write this up here. So I'm taking this IH bar from here and dividing it on that side. So you get something like trace of gamma GN. Maybe I'll skip the trace again. I mean, that's implied anyway. So let me just write it this way. Gamma GN over H bar. And then there is the plus sigma n a over h bar. So these are the two terms there. One that comes from here, one that comes from here. And physically remember this one came from, you see, we took the original Schrodinger equation, h psi, added this sigma psi to it, which represents the connection to the contact, and then added the source. And when you look at d psi dagger psi dt, the h gives you nothing. As far as that's concerned, that's an isolated system. Probability doesn't change as long as this is Hermitian. This is what leads to loss of particles, and that's what this term represents. That's what comes in here. At the rate at which number of electrons is changing inside, that's this gamma gn over h. That's what is coming from. And then when you look at this third term, that's what is this, that's come from the source term. That's what is actually coming in from the contact. And the amount that comes in, that's this in scattering times. Now, usually at steady state, of course, this whole thing is zero. There is no change of electron density inside with time. So whatever current comes in, it goes out. And the way you think about this is then that, you know, gamma itself has all these terms in it, gamma 1 plus gamma 2 corresponding to the two contacts. The sigma n has two terms in it, the sigma n1 plus sigma n2. And if you add all that up, the answer is 0. But if you just take the terms with sigma n1 and gamma 1, then you will get the current at terminal 1. If you take sigma n2 and gamma 2, you'll get the current at terminal 2. And of course, the sum of all that, I1 plus I2, all that adds up to 0. That, of course, is Kirchhoff's law, basically. That if you have this thing sitting by itself, steady state, the total current coming into this thing is 0. Let's just plain Kirchhoff's law, I1 plus I2. And if there are four terminals, I1 plus I2 plus I3 plus I4 would be 0. And that's kind of what you're proving here. That left-hand side is 0, and all the right-hand side, all of them added up is 0. But then, what's on the right-hand side, you could divide up into what comes from contact 1, what comes from contact 2, what comes from contact 3, and whatever it is. And that's how you define the various currents. And this, of course, is the current per unit energy. Then if you integrate over energy, that's how you'd get the total current. So this is roughly the idea of how you can come up with these equations from Schrodinger equation. But the important reason I kind of go through this is I want to make this point that you need to take the usual Schrodinger equation and kind of add contacts and a source term to it. That's number one point. And number two point is when you have multiple sources, you cannot add the wave functions due to the multiple sources, you have to add the psi dagger size. That's the important physics of everything. And these equations, what's usually called this non-equilibrium Green function equations, they kind of allow you to do this, allow you to put contacts on Schrodinger equation in a way, straight. Okay. Now, one point I had mentioned earlier, that in order to treat big devices, there is an additional feature that needs to go into this, which is this dephasing. Dephasing meaning, as I mentioned, when you do a calculation based on equations like this, you'll get all these interference effects. So for example, if you take a device with two impurities in it, let's say you put in the potentials, two impurities, you tend to get interference effects between them. Which means if they happen to be exactly half a wavelength apart or quarter wavelength apart, you'll get different answers because there's interference. In the real world at room temperature, you'll usually never see that. things will add according to Ohm's law. And the reason is, people say, well, because what's reflected here and what's reflected here, normally at room temperature wouldn't really interfere in any stationary way. Because usually you have this material which is all jiggling around continuously, which tends to wash out all these interference effects, unless you go to really small devices or really low temperatures. And people have seen those interference effects. And there are devices where it's important. But lots of times, they're not important, which means if you're trying to model a device based on something like this, then you need to have a way of putting in dephasing. And the way you put in dephasing is, the way you often people think about dephasing, is it is almost as if there is another contact here of a kind. As if electrons can kind of go out and come back in after their phase has been randomized. So we won't go into this in this course in detail. In the graduate course, we talk a lot more about that. We won't go into that. But the way dephasing is included in this thinking is, I mean, this whole method, this NEGF method, it allows you a very natural way to put in dephasing. And the way you do it usually is that just as there's a sigma 1 and sigma 2 due to your two contacts, you also have something due to scattering processes. There's a sigma s, which is almost like another contact, conceptually. Except that no electrons really go out there. There's no current at this contact. So the sigma s is such, I mean, and those are the things that we won't go into, is such that there is actually no current flowing at this terminal. But it leads to dephasing because electrons, as they go through, they kind of come out here and then go back in. And when they go back in, their phases have been completely randomized. Just as every electron that comes in from the contact has its phase completely random when it comes in, etc. So if you include such scattering processes into this, then you'd have a more complete description of things, you know, which, as you put in more and more scattering, would actually become, give you answers just like the semi-classical method, and would eventually lead to diffusion, drift diffusion type of equations, etc. But for very small devices, of course, that's where you really need to go to this level and model things. Okay. Now, there's one last point that I want to mention in this context, and we'll go on. Yeah. Right, because the strength of the source, like what comes in, will depend on gammas. So if you have a different type of contact, I think it would affect the nature of that gamma, because it depends on the density of states available in that contact. Right, so that would be the part about how you actually evaluate the gamma. So that is one thing I wanted to say. I guess the rest of the class, what I'll really be talking about is a little more detail of how to get this gamma, what that is about. Right? Physically, again, it is like what we said in September, that electrons have to go in and out, and there's this gamma 1, gamma 2, etc. And now we have a matrix version of it. That's about it. Now, when I was trying to introduce these equations, I said, well, you know, let's take a very simple example, namely one where you had a hydrogen molecule and H was like a 2x2 matrix. And you said, well, what's gammas? What are the gammas? Well, you might write it something like this. You could write a minus I over 2, gamma 1, 0, 0, 0, minus I over 2. 0, 0, 0, gamma 2, for example. You said you could write down a 2x2 matrix, and physically you can kind of see that from contact 1, electrons only come into point 1, so that's where you have the non-zero element, etc. And This is often a good way to get started. You know, if you experimentally have some idea how easily electrons are going in and out from the current level and all that, this is a good way to put things in and get more. Now, in general though, often, for small devices especially, it's important, I mean, to actually describe it well, it is not enough to put in a constant number like this, but as someone had pointed out in the beginning, there are times when you actually really need something that's energy dependent. Because in physically you can see that when an electron is trying to get out, ideally, of course, contacts have no preference in energy. Whether you're here or here, you get out equally well. But then, in real contacts, often some energies are able to get out a little easier than others. That seems reasonable. And what is more, there is actually a very well-defined prescription for how to find these sigmas and gammas. You know, here I just said intuitively you could write it down like this, but there's actually a very well-defined prescription so that if someone actually gave you in detail the nature of this contact, you know, what it's made of, what its Hamiltonian is, what its energy levels are, how it is connected. If you knew that entire microstructure properly, there's a very well-defined prescription for calculating the sigmas. Now, in practice, often it may not be worth doing all that just because the real contact on which people are making measurements is often not that well known at the microscopic level. That's all. And so you may build a model to great detail, but that may not be what the real thing is anyway. In which case, you might as well do something simple and get started. See? On the other hand, if you really want to model a device and you know it well, then there's a very well-defined prescription for doing all that. And this is, again, something that we won't go into much in this course, but I wanted to give you a bit of a flavor for the argument that goes into it. And one particular result that you need for the next homework set is the following. And that is that if you have a 1D wire, let's say, then we know how to write the Hamiltonian for this 1D wire. Basically, you'd have something on the diagonal and something coupling the nearest neighbors. You know, I think I wrote this as T0, something like that. And you can write down the matrices, etc. Now, the question is, if I now get to one of the ends, and now what I'd like to do is have an H here and write a sigma here, sigma 1. And write a sigma here, like sigma 2. Question is, how should I choose my sigma 1 and sigma 2, for example? And you could make a simple guess and just write it as I gamma, like I said. But then what will happen is you'll find you'll get significant amount of reflection here, ordinarily. On the other hand, if you choose it in a particular way, which I want to describe to you, then you actually will get a nice smooth contact where there won't be any reflections at all at the interface, right? And that is what you kind of need to use for this next homework set. Okay? And the basic result is, let me just state the result first and then I'll explain where this comes from. That as long as you have a nice smooth wire, as you know, there is this EK relationship that we had talked about. So, can you help me with what is the, I suppose I'd write EK relationship. What is the EK relationship for a wire like this whose diagonal elements are epsilon and nearest neighbor coupling is T0? Any thoughts? So you'd say it will be E of K, write it here, epsilon plus 2T0 cosine Ka. So we are saying that once you get out here in the leads or into the contacts, it's a uniform wire where you have a simple EK relationship. Now, inside the device, in general, you don't really have an EK relation. Why? Because EK relation implies that it's a uniformly periodic wire. And inside, of course, you could have all kinds of potential scatterers, all kinds of stuff. But once you get to the ends, you assume that you have a nice EK relationship like this. Now, then the point is that the result that I want to mention is the sigma 1 of E looks like this. It's 0 everywhere except for the 1, 1 point. That means except for this point. So sigma 1 E looks something like this. Everything's 0 except for this. And this point is minus T0 e to the power I k a. Rest is all zeros. So for a given energy, you first go to this equation, find the corresponding k a, then put it back in here, and then you have this element. That's it. And if you want to know sigma 2, that's also similar, except that now the only non-zero element is at the other end. So if I wanted sigma 2, it would look just like this. But it's this end that is minus T0 e to the power ika. Rest is zeros. So this is not meant to be obvious or anything. That's what I'll try to kind of tell you where it comes from in the next few minutes. But I'm just telling you, this is the basic rule. And as I said, if you notice that this is a quantity that's complex. It's got a real part as well as an imaginary part. And if you had just put in an imaginary part to it, then you know, you'd get answers you'd have some amount of reflections here. So when you actually try to model it, even if you had a uniform wire, you wouldn't find that electrons could propagate uniformly from here to here. You'd actually get reflections at the two ends. But by putting something like this in, there's actually absolutely no reflections. You'd get nice, you know, straight transmission as long as there's no potential here. Right? And that's kind of what this next homework problems try to show. That by using this, it works quite nicely. And okay, so what I want to show you is where this comes from. And the basic idea works something like this, actually. So supposing we have a device like this, and you have electrons coming in from here, going back reflected, and out here it's getting transmitted. Now, as you said, when you go to the Schrodinger equation, we say that because of what's coming in from here, you get a source term, and then you also have the sigma. Sigma is because of this connection to the contacts. Now, the source term takes a little more work, but the connection to the contact, the sigma, that you can see relatively easily. You can see why, at this point, you need to add a minus T0 e to the power ika. That you can see in a relatively simple way. So let me just show you that first. So supposing we are talking about what happens at this end, you know, the end where there is nothing incident from this side. So let's go to this point. So that's like the point number n. And if I were to write the Schrodinger equation at that end, it would have looked like E psi n is equal to epsilon psi n. And then something times psi n minus 1 and something times psi n plus 1. Now, can you help me with what these are? What are these coefficients? If you remember? T0, right? That's this nearest neighbor couplings. So if I'm actually writing out the matrix equations, if I go to this point, I'd have E psi n equals epsilon psi n, and then a T0 to the left and a T0 to the right. Right? And since what I want to do is get rid of this n plus 1th point, because psi n plus 1 is not part of what I want to deal with. 1 to n, that's it. I want to get rid of it. And we had discussed earlier that there's all kinds of boundary conditions you can use when you're calculating EK relations. You could say that the n plus 1th point is like periodic boundary conditions and coupled back to the 1th point. That was periodic boundary conditions. Or you could say the wave function goes to 0 there. That's another part. Now, in this context with the devices, when electrons are, you know, coming in, going out smoothly, then the best boundary condition is to say that at this end, the wave function basically looks like an e to the power ikx, you know, a plane wave that is propagating out with nothing coming back. Because out here, the idea is we have a contact where the electrons go out and just go out, nothing else comes back. And so at this end, the wave function should have this form. Now, if you impose that boundary condition, then what it tells you is that psi n plus 1 would be equal to, by the way, I think usually I write the nearest neighbor coupling as minus T0, if I remember correctly. Right? So if you do that, I think that's what we have been doing in the past. So I'll just make this minus so you see that. Okay. Now, with this boundary condition then, it's like psi n plus 1 should be looking something like e to the power ik n plus 1 times a, because that's like the x. Similarly, psi n should be like e to the power ik n a. It's, you know, something in front, you know, some coefficient in front, but this is the form it should have. What that means is that psi n plus 1 should be simply e to the power ika times psi n. So that's the basic boundary condition that we are trying to impose. That once you come to this end, wave function at n plus 1 is just like wave function at n, but multiplied by e to the power ika. Because if you accept that, then what we are doing, you can see, is we take this psi n plus 1 and replace it with psi n e to the power ika. So, you know, previously we had talked about a zero boundary condition, then there was the periodic boundary condition, and this is what you could call the open boundary condition. The one where, you know, you say out here all you have is a wave going outwards, nothing coming back. And that would then tell you that psi n plus 1 is this, and so I've kind of gotten rid of psi n plus 1 now. And in that case, you see, I can just take this and include it with this. So this minus T0 psi n minus 1, that we just leave as is. Because n minus 1 is a point inside the device, I don't need to do anything with it. There's no problem there. So that we just leave as is, not an issue. But the n plus 1 then, we gotten rid of it by simply adding this to the diagonal element. And that is basically what this tells you. You see, to h, remember, at the end of the day, what you're doing is we had a h before, and then you're adding a sigma 1 and a sigma 2. And the sigma 2 then looks like this, as I mentioned. It's got this minus T0 e to the power ika at the last point. So at the last point, it just adds a minus T0 e to the power ika to it, and that's it. Okay? So this is kind of the simple justification for where this would come from. Okay? Now, the one that needs a little more discussion is when you get to the first point out here. Around here. Okay. So, like, let's call this, say, the zeroth point, and then you have a plus one point on this side, a minus one point on this side, etc. And this end is a little more complicated because you have a source term as well, because you have something coming in. You see, out here I could say that all we have is a wave going out. So, psi n plus one is related to psi n in a certain way. At this end, I cannot quite say that because, you know, I have something coming in and something going out. So the wave function at this end actually has the form of something times e to the power ikx, you know, which is like iknA. And then you have, I guess for the moment, I could take this amplitude as my reference, call it 1, and then something that is reflected back. Something that goes backwards. So at this end, I could say my wave function has an incident wave and a reflected wave. And from this point of view, you'd see that psi at 0 would be, that's n equals 0, that comes to just 1 plus r. And if I have to write the psi at minus 1, I would write it as e to the power minus ika plus r times, can you help me? R times. I'm trying to write, like at any point n, if I'm writing psi at any point n, it looks like this. And so at psi at 0, n is equal to 0. That's how all the exponentials went away, and I got 1 plus r. Now when I go to minus 1, n is equal to minus 1. So I get e to the power minus ika, and then plus r e to the power ika. And remember, what I'm trying to do is, if I write the equation at point 0, I'd have something like this. E psi 0 equals epsilon psi 0 minus t 0 psi minus 1. And minus t0 psi plus 1. And I'm at this end, of course, plus 1 is fine, 0 is fine, that's part of the device. I'm trying to get rid of the minus 1. So I'm trying to replace this in terms of the other things. That's what I'm really trying to do. And at this end, it was relatively simple. I could just say that this was e to the power ik times that. Now, here it isn't quite like that, because you see, psi minus 1 isn't exactly something times psi 0, because I got these two terms there. You see, if only one of them were there, it would have been just exponential times that. But now I got two terms, so it isn't quite like that. But what I could do is, I could write this psi minus 1 as 1 plus r times e to the power ika. So that takes care of the r, but then I have to add something else to it, right, to make it work. Can you tell me what is the extra? You see, r e to the power ik, that's fine, but I don't have this, so I need to put that in. And I have this thing extra, so I have to subtract that out. That's it. So if I use this here, you'll notice what we get is, so based on this, I could write psi of minus 1 is equal to psi at 0 times e to the power ika, like I had before, but then there is this additional term here. So when I substitute this in here, what we get is epsilon minus t0 e to the power ika psi 0 minus t0 psi plus 1, etc. But then there is this additional term. So all I did is, for psi minus 1, I'm replacing from here. So I get psi 0 times something, but I get an extra term, a constant thing there. And that's what is coming in here. So again, the effect, as you can see, is to add this here, which is like the sigma. That's the sigma 1 that we had. But there is an additional, what you might call a source term. Okay? Now, by the way, the algebra for this is actually worked out in the book. So this would be like at the beginning of chapter 8. So you could see this exact same algebra. It's all worked out there. You could see that. But point is, now you have a source term. And the thing I had said earlier, that the source term is proportional to gamma. You can see that's also kind of true, because you see, in the way we are doing this, the sigma is like minus T0 e to the power ika. And so what is gamma? Well, the gamma is I times sigma minus sigma dagger, which comes to minus I T0 times, can you help me? Is sigma minus sigma dagger. So sigma is e to the power ika, and sigma dagger is e to the power minus ik. Right? If we just looked at the sigma 1-1 element. So the point I'm trying to make is that I had earlier said how the source term depends on gamma, and you can kind of see that when you go through this, you also get a source term that actually is like gamma. Right? So all I'm trying to show you is that in general how people obtain these source terms and the sigmas. What they do is they start from an infinite system and then put in the boundary conditions at the ends to get rid of the contacts. And after you get rid of the contacts, what happens is you get an effective sigma 1, an effective sigma 2, and an extra source term wherever there's an incident wave. That's kind of the overall procedure for how one would do this. Whereas in the beginning, what I said was, well, let's not get into worry about these details. Just physically, I said, well, you had to have something here to connect to the context and something to describe the source. Okay. Anyway, but the bottom line I wanted to make clear is that the basic equations that you want to use are these, usually, and everything else is the details of how you write down a sigma, how you describe a particular contact, what you have to do to find those sigmas. That's what the details we are talking about. And in this class, we have talked about just two particular models for it. One is where you put in just a constant sigma. That was like the last homework. And the next homework, where do you use a sigma that looks like this minus T0 e to the power ika. So in this class, that's all we are really talking about. In the graduate class, we talk about a lot more other devices where all kinds of sigmas that you need to model different types of devices. But the equations is basically this. There's not very much more to add to it. Apart from what I said, that if you wanted to include dephasing processes, you'd need a sigma S. But other than that, there's really not very much more to add. This is it.